Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for July 17, 2017. Now, this is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, good evening, and welcome to our listeners this evening for another show about the news affecting our veterans and their families.
Yes, and before we update our listeners on what's new in Washington, D.C., I'd like to recognize and thank the sponsors of tonight's show. American Legion's John F. Murphy, Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases and military personnel actions. I'd like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us anytime during the show. Here's our toll-free number. It's 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, Richard.
Thank you, David. And we have lots of news and information affecting our veterans. Let's start with some news from Washington, D.C. This past Tuesday, July the 11th, the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs held a hearing to consider draft legislation proposed by U.S. Senator Johnny Isaacson that would affect the future of the Veterans Choice Program by making many major improvements to enhance the timeliness and efficiency of delivery of veterans care. As he said, the future of the Veterans Choice Program is a critical issue to tackle. The most important objective is to enhance the experience of the veteran and the doctor to make the best decisions for the veteran without the over-bureaucratization of the process, with the veteran in consultation with his doctor making the decisions on their health care. You have the perfect pairing. As we move forward on the completion of the improvement of the Veterans Choice Program, I intend to give the VA the flexibility and time to implement these changes and to see to it that we never diminish the role of the VA health services or the lives of our veterans today or in the future, as the senator said.
Here's some background about that legislation. As many already know, the Veterans Choice Program was created in the Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act, passed by Congress in 2014. Some of you may recall that it was in 2014 that the VA received a lot of adverse media attention when it came to light that many veterans across the country had been put on waiting lists by the VA hospitals, and the times tracking their waiting times was falsified, a big scandal, and we're still seeing the ripple effects of that today. Well, this Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act, passed by Congress in 2014, was designed to give the VA the tools needed to improve the veterans' access to the quality and timely health care that they deserve. Now, this Veterans Choice Program currently gives veterans who meet specific criteria the option of seeking care outside the VA healthcare system. Under the current rules, the veteran must either be more than 40 miles away from a VA facility or have a 30-day or longer wait for the appointment to be eligible for private sector care.
And the Veterans Choice Act of 2017 would give all veterans who are eligible to receive care at the VA the option of seeking care outside of the VA from a community care provider that best meets their needs. The proposal reflects a change from existing law, which only allows those veterans who live more than 40 miles from the nearest VA medical center or who face a wait time of 30 days or longer to get care outside the VA. Under the proposed Veterans Choice Act of 2017, those restrictions would be lifted so that any veteran, along with his or her doctor, can consider all available health care opinions to help ensure they receive the best and most efficient care.
According to the Senate press release about this legislation. This Veterans Choice Act of 2017 would do a number of things. First, it would expand the Veterans Choice Program to get veterans who are eligible for VA services the ability to choose to receive care or services from an eligible community care provider. And eligible health care providers would include Medicare participating providers, but the Department of Defense, the Indian Health Service, any federally qualified health center or others that are deemed fit by the Secretary of the VA. So it's really expanding the pool of possible private providers or non-VA providers. And the law would also streamline the enrollment, payment, and scheduling processes for veterans and third-party administrators and or providers that are participating in the Veterans Choice Program. There's been a lot of criticism about the Veterans Choice Program really not being user-friendly, and many private providers don't appreciate the delays in payment. This legislation would also do several other things. It would give the Secretary of the VA a greater oversight over the implementation, as well as over the participating community health care providers and or third-party administrators. The bill would also ensure that veterans do not pay more for care outside of the VA, and to help expedite the payment process by the VA. And finally, it would require the VA to submit a strategic plan to Congress that includes a five-year forecast for health capacity and capabilities and the demand for care. So just keep in mind, though, this is merely proposed legislation at this point and has not yet been enacted into law.
Yes, and the Senate committee has also considered two other bills that would revise the VA's care in the community programs. Eisen informed committee members that he seeks an opportunity to put together a bipartisan bill with the best provisions from all of the bills. And I quote, "Providing veterans with the option to receive care in the community is simply leveraging all available health care options to provide the best and most efficient care to our nation's veterans. If you look through everything we have done, there is a total commitment by this committee and its members to make sure veterans' health services are the best health services it can be, and that our veterans get the best services they can get."
Yep, and in addition to those health care issues, another big issue that's received attention this past week has dealt with veterans' education benefits. On Thursday, July the 13th, 2017, the House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman Phil Rowe from Tennessee and the ranking Democrat member Tim Walz from Minnesota introduced H.R. 3218, called the Harry W. Colmery Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2017. It was named for the principal architect of the original GI Bill, and its intent is to improve and extend GI Bill education benefits granted to veterans, their surviving spouses, and their dependents. Congressman Rowe and Congressman Walz issued some statements this past week in support of the bill. I'll quote Congressman Phil Rowe first. He said, "We have a duty to care for every man and woman who served their country honorably as they begin their transition from active duty to civilian life. One essential way we can empower service members is to give them the tools they need to succeed in whatever career they pursue. Data shows time and time again that student veterans outperform their peers in the classroom, and I'm proud of this bipartisan legislation to expand GI Bill benefits. The Harry W. Colmery Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2017 makes lasting changes to the GI Bill in several ways, by expanding educational benefits for veterans, their dependents, and surviving spouses." Congressman also said that he's particularly proud that for the first time in the history of the GI Bill, new beneficiaries will be able to use this benefit throughout their lifetimes. As he said, a lot of work has gone into this process, and I thank the veteran service organizations for their tireless and continued dedication to our nation's veterans. I'm proud to work with Ranking Member Walz and members from both sides of the aisle to prioritize the future of America's heroes and their loved ones. And I look forward to getting this important legislation to President Trump's desk," and I unquote. Congressman Tim Walz, who's the ranking Democrat on the House Veterans Committee, also issued a statement in which he said the following, quote, "The original GI Bill served as the foundation upon which an entire generation of service members returning from World War II built not just their education, but their entire civilian lives. Since that time, the GI Bill has remained the preeminent means by which millions of veterans pursued quality higher education and raised middle-class families upon their return home. That is why I am so proud to announce, alongside my friend and colleague, Chairman Phil Rowe, the Harry W. Comrie Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2017. This bipartisan GI Bill will improve the lives of future generations of veterans by enhancing existing benefits, correcting gaps in eligibility, and providing new benefits to help our veterans in today's economy without asking our troops or American taxpayers to pay more. A lot of hard work and deliberation went into the crafting this legislation, and I want to thank members from both sides of the aisle, as well as our well-respected veteran service organizations for their commitment to our nation's veterans and their families," unquote.
In addition, the Harry W. Comrie Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2017 would remove time restrictions to use the GI Bill, enabling future eligible recipients to use their GI Bill benefits for their entire lives, as opposed to the current 15-year timeline. It would also simplify the benefits for future service members by consolidating the GI Bill into a single program over time, which would reduce VA's administrative costs. The legislation provides significant increases in GI Bill funding for reservists and guardsmen, dependents, surviving spouses, and surviving dependents. It also provides 100% GI Bill eligibility to post-9/11 Purple Heart recipients. In addition, this bill restores eligibility for service members whose school closes in the middle of a semester and creates a pilot program that would pay for veterans to take certain high technology courses. This bipartisan bicameral package is budget neutral and includes provisions that have been proposed and prioritized by veteran service organizations. It is sponsored by every member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs.
Yes, it does sound like it's a pretty popular bill, and many veteran service organizations strongly support it. One example of that was the response this past week by the Vietnam Veterans of America, one of the major veteran service organizations. Vietnam Veterans of America issued a press release that says, quote, "The Forever GI Bill," which is another name for it, "will make the GI Bill a lifetime benefit so that veterans can go to school when it's right for them, not when the government tells them to," according to John Rowan, the president of Vietnam Veterans of America. He went on to say, quote, "Vietnam Veterans of America has long advocated for improvements to the GI Bill to allow veterans greater flexibility in accessing their educational and vocational benefits. We are glad that veterans will no longer be forfeiting their educational benefits because their timing didn't fit the government's random guidelines," unquote. Now, the removal of the arbitrary 15-year time limit will benefit veterans on two ends of the employment continuum. In many cases, veterans are unable to use the GI Bill because health and family have to be their main priorities when they transition out of the service. And for others, a successful transition may mean beginning a career as soon as they leave the service. However, if unforeseen economic and technological changes end that career, a veteran would, under current rules, have lost their eligibility to retrain under the GI Bill. And John Rowan went on to say, and I quote, "We are thankful to Chairman Rowe, Ranking Member Walz, and the members of the Forever GI Bill Coalition for fighting with us to ensure that future veterans will have an improved lifetime GI Bill." He went on to say, "We will continue to fight for those left ineligible for the GI Bill benefits due to unfair administrative discharges," unquote. So that's a big news. It will be welcomed by many veterans. We'll have to track that and see how it goes.
And then in other news, this past Thursday, July 13th, U.S. Senator John Tester of Montana, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, issued a press release about bipartisan legislation that addresses the critical infrastructure needs of America's military and ensures veterans across the country have access to the timely care and benefits they have earned. Senator Tester helped improve the Military Construction and Veterans Affairs Appropriations Bill by securing key provisions that enhance access to VA care for veterans in rural areas, better address medical workforce shortages, and invest in efforts to deliver care for the nation's growing number of women veterans.
Yes, Senator Tester has played a very active role in veterans issues, and he serves, as Richard said, as the ranking Democrat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. He offered proposed language in this appropriations bill that would allow medical corpsmen and medics from the armed services to be hired by the VA and then trained to become physician assistants. This is modeled after Senator Tester's bipartisan bill called the Physician Assistant Employment and Education Act, which I think is going to be important. We'll talk later in the show tonight about the large number of open positions in the VA. The VA is understaffed by tens of thousands, mostly on the medical side. So Senator Tester's effort is one of a number of ways to try to help resolve that. Senator Tester also authored a number of other provisions in the appropriations bill that would do things such as the following. It would prohibit the VA from closing or reducing the hours of operation at facilities across the country. It would, and I personally think this is really necessary, it would increase the number of employees working to resolve veterans' disability benefit claims and appeals. It would also allow the VA to provide fertility treatment through in vitro fertilization or adoption for disabled veterans. It would strengthen accountability and transparency among third-party contractors. It would increase funding for gender-specific health care services consistent with Senator Tester's proposed the Deborah Sampson Act, which we talked about on the show a couple months ago. It would also push the VA to streamline the process for veterans to receive travel reimbursement when they travel to receive VA health care. And I regularly have clients that run into problems with that issue. His bills would also strengthen services for homeless or at-risk veterans and their families. It would address chronic workforce shortages by assessing why employees leave the VA and identifying staffing needs. Again, something that ties into the fact that the VA is understaffed by tens of thousands of employees right now. And Senator Tester also proposed bills to increase access to care for rural veterans. He's from a pretty rural state himself, Montana. And it's tough for veterans that live in remote areas to get medical care, sometimes even outside the VA system. He also would propose that the VA hire more licensed professional mental health counselors, as well as marriage and family therapy. Now, this appropriations bill will now head to the Senate floor for a final vote, so we'll have to see if any of these proposals, if they all go through or not. Back to you, Rick.
We'll be keeping an eye on that one for sure. In more news from Washington, this past Wednesday, July the 12th, three lawmakers, Representatives Mike Thompson, Democrat from California, Don Young, a Republican from Alaska, and Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina, introduced a measure to force the Defense Department to declassify records about chemical and biological testing that the government performed on service members in the 60s and 70s in an attempt to connect the affected veterans with Department of Veterans Affairs benefits and health care. Unfortunately, though, their proposal was not allowed to go to a vote of the House, so the issue is still unresolved. The congressman sponsored language in a defense policy bill that would force the Secretary of Defense to either declassify documents related to the chemical program or explain to Congress why it can't. Unfortunately, on Thursday, July 13th, the House Rules Committee, which decides what goes before the House floor, struck down the proposal, so the declassification won't even be up for discussion before Congress. How shameful is that? Representative Mike Thompson called the fact that it didn't even make it out of committee shameful, as I said myself, and took to the House floor saying, "These tests were an ugly part of our history. They put veteran lives at risk, and our veterans have every right to know what it was they were exposed to and how much they were exposed to. We need to think about their safety and their security." the Defense Department conducted the land and sea-based tests known as Project 112 and Project SHAD, stands for Shipboard Hazard and Defense, from 1962 to 1974 to learn the effects of chemical and biological agents such as nerve gas and E. coli. About 6,000 service members were affected, according to the VA. Veterans were exposed to some of the most extreme and hazardous agents during the SHAD project and 112, and now suffer from the debilitating health care conditions, said Ken Weissman, Associate Legislative Director with Veterans of Foreign Wars. Representative Mike Thompson has been questioning the House, the Defense Department, about the testing since he was elected to the House in 1999, when a Navy veteran who had been subjected to chemical agents asked Thompson to look into it. Thompson said the Defense Department initially denied the testing took place, but admitted to it in the early 2000s when VA officials requested the department share information with them about possible exposure to warfare agents and who could have been affected. The Government Accountability Office issued a report in 2008 stating the VA and Defense Department needed to do a better job of identifying veterans who were exposed to testing and notify them. For 40 years, they denied it even happened, and for the last 10 years, they've been dragging their feet, Thompson said. There's no reason they shouldn't be forthcoming with this information. It's imperative that veterans and their families know what they were exposed to so that they can get the help and peace of mind they deserve. These veterans can't wait any longer. Sadly, some of them have already passed. You know, David, this really burns me up when I hear about this kind of stuff. You know, it gets back to that stuff we hear when we go talk to veterans. Delay, die. And that's exactly what's happening here. The VA and the Department of Defense, they're going to wait until all these men and women are dead and in the grave before they're going to finally come forward and say, yeah, these men and women were in fact infected, so we're sorry to their families. You know, David, this also raises an issue, you know, about the potential DNA effects. How about the offspring of some of these veterans who were affected by these chemicals? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
We have this going on with Camp Lejeune. You know, we have a couple of clients whose children have the exact same pituitary tumors that the veteran has. I mean, it just galls me to no end that these men and women are put in harm's way, and all they're asking for is reasonable compensation and health care, and all we do is turn our back on these people.
Right, and they're asking for information that many decades later, the government still has it classified, and you have to wonder, why is that? Is that, I really doubt there's some legitimate reason for continuing to classify the information. They ought to release it. It also reminds me of, this is just one example of testing that the Defense Department did on those in the service. I mean, these tests, as you mentioned, they dealt with the effects of chemical and biological agents, nerve gas, E. coli. I mean, that's pretty serious stuff, but we've represented a veteran that back in the early 60s, he was in a unit where they had members who were asked to volunteer to undergo testing of LSD to see the effects of LSD on them. And it's not clear that this particular veteran suffered any long-term side effects from it, but just goes to show that sometimes, you know, certainly in the history of our military, there have been times when our service members have essentially been guinea pigs, sometimes intentional guinea pigs, and other times perhaps unknowingly, where they were just subjected to significant dangers. And yeah, the military is tough, war is tough. But in situations where our troops are being used essentially as guinea pigs to test out warfare agents, it raises a lot of ethical issues, and it raises a lot of other issues that we're now seeing today, which are the long-term effects on veterans and their families.
Let me ask you a question. You're being a veteran. How long did it take for the Agent Orange to finally pass? I know it wasn't right after
it
Vietnam.
It took decades. It took decades after Vietnam. I don't have the exact timeline in front of me, but Vietnam veterans were having to fight that battle for many, many years, decades before the VA finally caved in, if you will. And what's amazing, you know, you and I have represented a lot of Vietnam veterans, and some of them were the troops in heavily in areas that were heavily saturated with Agent Orange. And for those of you that, like myself, I certainly didn't serve in Vietnam. You go on the internet. My point is, go on the internet and look up photographs of Vietnam that showed places where Agent Orange was sprayed, and this stuff just killed all the vegetation, which was the intent. The intent was remove the hiding places. The enemy was very effective in hiding in the jungles, and the Agent Orange was designed to wipe that out. It did a pretty good job of it. But meanwhile, the folks we have represented that served in those areas were told, oh, don't worry about it. It's not harmful to you. And meanwhile, you know, they're coming in contact with this stuff from the vegetation. They're drinking from rivers, from ponds, from other areas of water that had been in that same area. And it's just incredible that, you know, the government would the military, the leadership, the chain of command, the people the troops are indoctrinated to essentially blindly follow, and along with that, to blindly trust that they're going to look out for them. And and how far up the chain of command, you know, that really goes and should go as far as accountability. It's just something that ought to be discussed, because we still see it today in other issues, like we've discussed on past shows about, as you mentioned, the Camp Lejeune issue, contaminated drinking water. The Camp Lejeune is really just one of many, many bases where there was contamination. But not just the contaminated drinking water, but other issues. The open burn pits from in Iraq, Afghanistan, that issue is continuing to receive more and more attention, as it should. So, lots of things that we need to pay attention to, and we welcome our listeners to call in if they've had experiences with any of those issues. I'd like to go on to some other news. Go ahead, Rick.
And even some family members. You know, if you're loved one is one of those who unfortunately has passed, and you are aware of his or her service, we'd love to hear from you as well. Maybe you can share some of what you experienced, and like I said, we'd love to hear from all of you. So give us a ring.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. We'd like to hear from family members,
And that number, again, is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. I had to find that number here, David. We've got to get that out to our listeners.
Yep.
What else is going on, David?
Well, we talk a lot every week about, problems the VA has. But the VA, I want to shift gears here, the VA does a lot of good things. And you know, most veterans will acknowledge that, and I want to take a few minutes here and just highlight some of the good things that the VA has done. During this month and the remaining weeks of July, the VA has announced in their recognition program some exemplary VA facilities, VA employees, as well as civilian providers who are doing a great job to address the problem of veteran homelessness. The VA has made great strides in that in the last few years. According to VA Secretary David Chulkin, and I'll quote him, he says, VA's strong community efforts on veteran homelessness are being supported by the hard work, innovation, and dedication of thousands VA employees and civilian partners. Secretary Shulkin went on to say, and I quote, helping veterans get housing is vital for them, and it also demonstrates clearly to the nation our enduring commitment to those who have served so well, unquote. So the Secretary of the VA has an award for outstanding achievement and service for homeless veterans. And as part of that program, this month they're saluting the top achievers in three different categories, the first category being VA employees, the second being VA organizations, and the third being community organizations. So I'd like to announce the top achievers for this month of July and give a shout-out to these folks and these organizations doing a great job for homeless veterans. And the first is Julie E. Irwin, who's the homeless care line manager of the Veterans Integrated Service Network, located in the Bronx, New York. Also, Michael Ware, the supervisor of the homeless care team at the Erie VA Medical Center in Erie, Pennsylvania. And the third is Kristen Weiss, the program manager for Healthcare for Homeless Veterans Program for the Western New York Healthcare System based in Buffalo, New York. As far as VA organizations, the Secretary's awards this month went to the domiciliary service of the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System in Palo Alto, California. The Southeast Louisiana Veterans Healthcare System, their Healthcare for Homeless Veterans Program in New Orleans also was recognized for its achievements. And then third, the Albany Stratton VA Medical Center, their Healthcare for Homeless Veterans Program in Albany, New York, also made the list. Now, as far as community organizations, there are a number that received the awards from the Secretary this month. That include the Veterans Northeast Outreach Center of Haverhill, Massachusetts, whose executive director is Johnny Radka. Also, Family Endeavors Organization, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Heavy military and veterans presence in that part of North Carolina, as our listeners know. Another winner is the Greenville Housing Authority in Greenville, South Carolina, whose executive director is Ivory Matthews. Also, Team AmVets of Garden Grove, California, Project Community Connections Incorporated of Atlanta, Georgia, and last but not least, the Virginia Veteran and Family Support Program of Richmond, Virginia. So our shout-out and our kudos to those individuals and organizations for a job well done in helping the homeless veteran population in the United States. Back to you, Rick.
Thanks, David. In more VA news, and this is a personal favorite of mine, nearly 600 of the country's best wheelchair athletes are in Cincinnati, Ohio this week for the 37th National Veterans Wheelchair Games being held July 17th through the 22nd. The Wheelchair Games is a great example of some of the finest athletes on the planet displaying true skill and determination, said Dr. Shulkin, Secretary of the VA. These veterans have overcome significant injuries, and through intense rehabilitation and training, they have pushed themselves to the limit of athletic ability and competition. David, there are 19 events that these athletes will perform in, including basketball, bocce ball, different forms of shooting, billiards, bowling, fishing, archery, power soccer, swimming, and quad rugby. So those are quite events there. And the VA and Paralympic Veterans of America present the games each year. The multi-event sports rehabilitation program is open to U.S. veterans with spinal cord injuries and other disabilities who require the use of wheelchairs for athletic competition and who are eligible to receive care at VA medical facilities. The National Veterans Wheelchair Games is the most anticipated week of the year for so many paralyzed veterans members, said David Zerflew, National President of Paralyzed Veterans of America. The athleticism and community the games offer veterans with spinal cord injury or disease is a crucial component to their ongoing rehabilitation, and we're proud to partner with the Department of Veteran Affairs each year to present them. We encourage the Cincinnati community to come out and support our veteran athletes this week. VA research and clinical experience verify that physical activity is important to maintaining good health, speeding recovery, and improving overall quality of life. for many injured veterans, the Games provide their first exposure to wheelchair athletics. Veterans competing in the Games come from nearly every state, as well as Puerto Rico and Great Britain. Opening ceremonies were held earlier today, July 17th, in the Grand Ballroom at Cincinnati's Duke Energy Convention Center, where many of the week's competitive events take place. Other events will be held at the Stargell Stadium, Fairfield Sportsman's Association, Yatesman's Cove Park, Powell Crossley Jr. YMCA, and other venues around the Cincinnati metro area. For a complete schedule of events and additional information about the National Veterans Wheelchair Games, visit www.wheelchairgames.org. Follow NVWG on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Also, David, as of this past Thursday, Mayor Buddy Dyer of Orlando announced that these National Veterans Wheelchair Games are coming to Orlando in 2018.
That's great.
This will be the first time that the Olympics will be coming to Orlando. And as we said, there will be nearly 600 veterans participating in all the various athletic competitions. Dyer said, Orlando is the perfect choice for these games. We've become, I think, the country's premier destination, and the wheelchair game will continue that tradition. Last year, Orlando hosted the second annual Invictus Games, an international sporting event for wounded or injured service members founded by Great Britain's Prince Harry. Orange County leaders said much of the games will be hosted at the Orange County Convention Center. The 38th National Veterans Wheelchair Games will happen in Orlando from July 29th to August 4th, 2018. And upon conclusion in Cincinnati, they will do the passing of the torch, just like we see in the other Olympics that we're all familiar with, going from Cincinnati to Orlando. So that's great news for the state of Florida. With all the veterans that we have in this area, David, coming out outside of the Ocala area, this should get quite a lot of people over there, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's great that that Orlando is which has so much to offer, is going to host it next year in 2018. But those interested can follow what's going on this week. It's all week this week in Cincinnati. So
hey, David,
job well done.
Have you ever seen people in wheelchairs and they're playing basketball or?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing, and I'm really curious to see this power soccer. That should be quite an event. I'm going to try to hook up and try to see something online. Maybe they'll have a live feed into one of the games or something.
Yeah.
But that would be something else. And quad rugby, that's another one. That takes a lot of strength. If you're paraplegic and you're just using your upper body, these are true athletes. They really are. They train as hard as any athlete.
Well, they're also very inspirational, not only to other veterans who may have paralysis issues, but just other veterans and those who've never been in the military, just to see what these veterans have gone through and suffered in their life and overcome their disabilities to become, as you said, really outstanding athletes. It's amazing and a great program. So thanks for sharing that and doing that additional research, Richard, about the programs and the plans next year for 2018 in Orlando. We'll look forward to that and following that. So we got other VA news to report for our listeners. As we've mentioned both earlier tonight and in many prior shows over the last 6 months, one of the big problems facing the VA right now is that there are so many unfilled VA jobs, which contributes to longer waiting time on the medical side and also other problems like the long delays, disability claims, and certainly on disability appeals. According to recent VA data, the most recent I have with specific numbers was as of April, There were 49,386 vacancies throughout the VA as of April. Most of those, the vast majority, over 45,000, about 45,360, were on the healthcare side of the department. The VA obviously is looking for a lot of good people who want to do important work serving our country and serving our veterans. So if you know someone who would like to work for the VA, you can find out more at the website. It's easy to want to remember. It's www.va.gov/jobs. That's www.va.gov/jobs. Excuse me. So check that out and spread the word. Help us spread the word on that because the VA is doing great work for veterans. That's their goal and that's their mission, and they need more help, more employees to do that. So, Rick, I understand you have more to discuss on the issue of legislation and the VA appeals issues. We've talked about that. What do you want to say tonight about that?
And before I get to that, David, I got some more news for Central Florida in the Citrus County, Hernando area. United Way has partnered up with the local VA or veterans chapters here, and they're going to have a big golf tournament. I'm going to be on the board for that golf tournament March 12th of 2018. And we really look to raise a lot of money. The money is going to go directly to helping our veterans in the Citrus County area and possibly in the surrounding communities. It's going to be a very big event. It's going to be played at a great golf course called Black Diamond. And I know if anyone locally is listening to this and they want to get involved, they can call me at 727-612-1515, and I'll get you in touch with the people at the United Way. But I thought it was really great that they reached out for, they actually reached out for me and a couple of other veterans to ask for us to partner up and to put on this big golf tournament. So again, that's going to be March 12th, 2018. And I know that's quite a ways away, but when it comes to these types of events, you know, planning is the key. But as far as more news from Congress, we continue to follow a proposed bill called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. As we at Corey and Hurley maintain, this legislation, which is S-1024 and H.R. 2288, is more for the convenience of the VA and will make it easier for the VA to deny appeals rather than helping veterans. It has passed the House already, but is now awaiting action in the Senate. In short, this legislation will make the system worse for veterans. It removes the VA's duty to assist veterans after an initial denial of the claim. It is obvious the VA is trying to make things easier for the VA and not really help our veterans. The legislation won't fix the long processing time for current cases, which are already on appeal. The effect of the legislation will also be to encourage or pressure veterans to waive a hearing and waive a right to submit new evidence if they want the faster track with the Board of Veterans Appeals. That may help the VA deny appeals faster, but it sure does not help veterans. You know, David, and my concern on all this is so many of our veterans are receiving assistance from representatives who really aren't up on what's going on in D.C. And my concern is that they're going to see this, you know, it's got a fancy title here, Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017, as if it's going to be helping our veterans. And my concern is, you know, again, we're going to start getting cases, David, where the veteran comes in and says, well, I didn't know. You know, I went and saw this guy, and he said, hey, don't worry about it. You're taken care of. And next thing you know, the veteran has a lot of issues going on, and he wasn't represented properly, and his case is kind of treading water, I shudder to think what could happen if this thing passes, and it looks like it's going to pass. So,
right,
you know, so there is a lot going on in D.C., and we'll continue to follow it. It's all affecting our veterans, and it will continue to. And we will continue to keep everyone updated on the current state of what's new in D.C. We encourage our veterans and their families to contact your two U.S. senators and members of the House and make them accountable to the needs of our veterans and their families. Remember, 2018 is around the corner. Your best voice is your vote. So get out there and vote. If your senator or your representative is not doing their job, don't send them back to D.C. It's that simple. You know, we don't have term limits, but you know, the power of the ballot is your voice for term limits. So if they're not doing what you want them to do, especially when it comes to helping our veterans, don't send them back to D.C. Send someone else who's really going to take care of our veterans. Well, I guess I should get off my soapbox, then, David.
Well, if I could just add to that, one thing that is an eye opener, or may be an eye opener to a lot of listeners and veterans and their family members, is that this appeals reform legislation that you talk about, it passed the House without any opposition. It's now in the Senate. It's passed the Senate committee. It's now awaiting vote by the full Senate. And just with what's happened so far, I expect it's going to pass overwhelmingly in the Senate, and President Trump is going to sign it. And you may wonder, well, how can that be? Because listeners for the last several months have heard us criticize this law tremendously, and they wonder, how can that be? Is there a disconnect there? And I'm telling you, the disconnect is that this bill is being publicized, being promoted as a solution to the problem of cases, particularly on appeal, disability compensation appeal cases, taking literally years. And the big driver of this bill is the VA bureaucracy itself, which managed over the last year and a half to get enough of the major veteran groups, American Legion, VFW, Paralyzed Veterans of America, and a few others, to jump on board. Some of them, I think, with caution, because they were aware that they had reasons to distrust the VA. But nevertheless, the bottom line is they jumped on board. They got on the bandwagon, which is all the VA needed to then go to Congress and say, you know, if you go back earlier this year in May and watch the House committee hearings about this, where the hearing, there was no analysis of this legislation. It was basically chairman of the committee going down the line of these veteran service officers sitting at this table saying, well, do you support it, yes or no? Do you support it, yes or no? Do you support it, yes or no? And they're all going to, ultimately they said yes, even though some of them had qualifications. There were a number of veteran groups, including the Vietnam Veterans of America, which strongly opposed it, and they put that in writing. And we've tried to publicize that. But there have been other groups as well that had military veterans advocates. We had John Wells on the show back in late May to talk about problems with the bill. So this is not just Corey and Hurley's opinions about this. This is backed up with analysis that we've done of this legislation, but also comparing notes with other veteran groups. And it really is perplexing to me, but it's an eye-opening experience, I think, about the power of the bureaucracy, in this case the VA. And keep in mind, these are the same bureaucrats that created and perpetuated this system that has brought us to this point. And it's a terribly broken system. Everyone agrees it's a broken system for the appeals. But where there's really not, I think, going to be an effective solution is with this legislation. And the problem is, Rich, as you say, this bill gets passed, and then people are going to expect things to be happening, to be improved. Well, the legislation itself gives the VA at least a year and a half to start implementing this and to do it on a kind of trial basis at some levels. So it could easily be a year and a half, 2 years before we start seeing the effects of this. And even then, there's still the question of, you know, which veterans whose cases are already on appeal, and we're talking about close to 500,000 cases that are on appeal at one stage or appeal or another, you know, whether they will be allowed to then choose for their cases to go into the new system, and whether that's actually going to help them, or if they stay under the current procedures, if the VA is really going to do anything in the next couple years to speed those cases up. I mentioned earlier tonight Senator Tester's proposal in the appropriations bill to hire more employees specifically for the claims and appeals. We'll have to see, but the program, you know, is severely understaffed. They might, you know, they may hire, you know, a handful of new BVA judges, and that's not going to make a serious dent into a situation where there's tens of thousands of cases. And I'll just, before I move on to our closing areas tonight, I want to just leave our listeners with an example of how broken the system is. One of our clients, 85-year-old veteran, he's had a case, we've been representing him for just going on a couple years now, and he had a hearing. We had a hearing. We represent him at a hearing. It was a video teleconference hearing. We were at the St. Petersburg Regional Office, and the judge, the veterans judge, veterans law judge for the Board of Veterans Appeals, was in Washington, D.C. The hearing was last July of 2016. That's when the hearing was. It's now a year and a week past the hearing, and we have yet to get a decision for this 85-year-old veteran. And this is a case at the hearing itself. The judge acknowledged that that case had been granted advancement on the docket, where the VA has certain criteria for when they will advance a case on the docket, which means they take that veteran's case and they move it ahead in line of other veterans' cases. That case was advanced on the docket, and in the VA world should have been expedited. Well, a year and a week later, still no decision. It's not as if we've been sitting it back. We've been rattling their cage every which way we know, and trying to get congressional assistance to get the BVA to move forward on this case. But so many veterans believe the system is one where it's delay, deny, and wait till they die. And certainly there have been tens of thousands of veterans who have passed on while their cases have been kind of been stagnating in the appeals system. So, you know, the people in the VA, the leadership is and has been over the years, certainly smart enough to recognize that this is a problem. And being as smart as they are, I think the only fair inference about the VA is that they're doing it and that they simply don't care, and there's even an element of malice about the whole thing. So that's my two cents, and I should get off my soapbox as we're about ready to wrap up tonight. Rick, would you like to talk about the coaching into care and the crisis line?
Absolutely.
Information for our listeners?
The VA's program called Coaching into Care, if you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having a difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll free, 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. Along that same note, I would like to say that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. I would also add, if you are on Facebook, go to Winkler's Wish Foundation. They also deal with veterans and suicide issues, PTSD, and also Veterans for Warriors. We have one of the people who works with that organization up in New Jersey. Also, that's a peer support counseling program. So there's a lot of help out there. So please, veterans, look for the help. Family members, help your veteran. Look for the help. David, why don't you take us out?
Thanks. And that's time for us to go for this evening. It's been a quick show. We'd like to thank you all for listening. We'd like to thank our producer of VBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'll be back next Monday, same time, same station. Hope to hear you then. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.